For the last few months, probably even over a year, I have been fascinated with the word worship. It's not uncommon. I go through periods of my life where I'm fascinated by different things. I find philosophy and theology and pretty much any the thinking about what it means to be human and how we ought to be human, I find that those are the issues that fascinate me. Anyway, the word worship has just constant echoes in my mind. And today I'd like to use that word as a jumping off point to talk about the widow, the widow's mite. We're going to talk about how we contribute and to the work of Jesus in the church. But I want to talk about it from the perspective of worship. Now, many of you know that one of my favorite ways to begin to think is by first looking at the words that I'm using. I always like to ask when I use a word, what exactly am I saying? Because a lot of times words these days are used in ways that do not reflect, I think, their root meaning. Now, granted, words can change over time. But the root meaning of the word worship is what fascinates me. Word worship is really a very simple etymology. Etymology is the study of the history of words. Not entomology, that's insects. It's etymology. And worship is very simple. The second half of the word, ship, the suffix, ship, is the art and practice of anything. So you have penmanship, authorship, craftsmanship, any ship that you want is the art or practice of anything. So what about the W-O-R in worship? Well, it's actually surprisingly simple. It's the first three letters of the word worth. Worth. Like what's worthwhile. And so worship turns out to be the art and practice of that which is worthwhile. Now, what in God's green earth would that be? And how do we understand it? Each one of us lives and makes decisions in our lives based on a conscious or an unconscious hierarchy of worth. We always do that. Okay? Your conscious hierarchy does not necessarily mean that it matches your unconscious hierarchy. I always like to say that because I remember a retreat a long time ago that I went on after I was a priest. And the retreat master asked me to bring 6 months' worth of my checkbook and 6 months of my MasterCard statements. And what she was actually doing, which was very, very intelligent of her, was saying, how does what you say matter to you, matters to you, match up with how you are spending your money. Because when you spend your money, you're actually voting, whether you know it or not, you're voting. You're saying, oh, this is super important, and this is not as important. So you're casting your vote. And your money, think about this, your money is your worth. It's your work. How do you earn it? Most of us, how do we earn it? Well, we work. And so when you buy stuff, you're saying, I'm trading my time and my effort for this, or to support that, or to do this. So it's you, it's your effort. So in the retreat, my director would have me, you know, first look at what I said, and then not that my checkbook or my credit card receipts were the last word, but it sure was an interesting commentary on what I had said. It was very interesting commentary. And she also, of course, had me ask me what I gave to charity, not necessarily to the church, because that's just one, but to how did I use my money to help people? So when you come to church and you say, I'm here to worship God, what does that mean? Because in my head, whenever I hear people saying, I am worshiping, I think of my first image is of some dude kind of kneeling down going, I worship you, I worship you. That's my first image. My second image is worship songs. And so I hear people praising God, you know, through singing. And I hear people worshiping. But when you really come down to it, is that, you know, in the Old Testament, God many times says, this people worships me with their mouths, but their hearts are far away from me. What is he referring to? Well, I think what he's referring to, of course, is that worship can degenerate. And it degenerates into a superficial exercise that is quite hypocritical. Because it does not match. As a matter of fact, that's what Jesus would charge the Pharisees with. Hypocrisy. Because what they would do is they would make sure to fulfill the things that were superficial, but then they would forget the things that really mattered, the things that had weight. That's why Jesus would say, you strain out the gnat and you swallow the camel. Because there's a distinction. So worship then is the way I do it now, is not primarily an emotional experience. Worship for me has turned into a kind of a checkup. When I come to church, or when I celebrate the Mass, or when I am, you know, because I live at a church, so I don't come to church very often. I just live here. But when I celebrate the Mass, it's my way of saying, is God really at the top of the things that I hold worthwhile? And is that reflected in the way I live? Is God really at the top? Now, I participate in the singing, and I receive communion and unity with Christ. But for me, it's always an issue of, the way I live my life, is it in line with what I say is worthwhile. Because remember, the things that are worth it are chosen by you. You have, whether you know it or not, you have a lived hierarchy of worth. I always tease people, and this is half teasing, that I have four great values in life. God is always first. People are second. Apple computer is third. And Starbucks is fourth. Okay. Now, that's half. Actually, it's pretty true. But it's still, you know, there's, it should be expanded. But is God really first in my decision making? How can I tell? And how can I tell that I'm not being a hypocrite? You know what? That's another word that I love. You know what a hypocrite means? Where the story, the history of the word? Hippo, H-Y-P-O, is actually pronounced in many, the prefix is hypo. And it's the opposite of hyper. So hypo is below and hyper is above. So when you have a hyperactive kid, a kid who doesn't stop, or a hypodermic needle goes below the skin. So hippo or hypo, and then crit. It's a variation on the word crisis. A hypo crisis. A crisis that's really not the crisis. Not, what's a crisis? An urgent moment of decision. That's what a crisis is. And so what is a hypo crisis? A hypo crisis is when you give undue importance to something that does not really matter and make sure not to give the proper importance to what really matters. So it's when you come home and you yell at your kids because you're mad at your boss. That is hypocritical. Because instead of being mad at your boss where you ought to be, you pick a lesser crisis that you can manage and then you let it out on the dog or on the kids. Okay? Now, the same thing is for when Jesus says to the Pharisees, you are hypocrites. Why? Because they practice their religion by giving worth to things that are superficial, and then they don't give worth to things that really matter. So they are hypocrites. They give worth to things that don't really matter. And they did it by making sure that they dress correctly, by making sure that they kept to the little things of the law, like, you know, you couldn't walk this many paces on the Sabbath, and you couldn't cook on the Sabbath, and you couldn't even heal on the Sabbath, and stuff like that. And then Jesus says, what about mercy? What about love? What about, and of course, that's what got him crucified, because he was telling people, you call that religion? You call that religion? And of course, it's just total, you know, BS. I don't know what comes into your mind when I say BS. For me, it means blessed stuff. If you have a dirty mind, that's up to you. I have no idea what you're talking about. So today then, when we use the word worship, we're talking about what is really what we have chosen to be the organization of our lives, and how are we acting on it? Now, let's turn to the gospel of today in the first reading. First of all, the first reading. I thought, you know, the first reading really is another instance. Here is the prophet Elijah. And the prophet Elijah is walking around, and he is thirsty and hungry. Now, he's a prophet. Okay? So he sees this widow, and there's a drought. And he sees this widow, and he says to her, "Bring me some water, and by the way, make me a sandwich. Make me a sandwich." That's not really, I mean, just flour and oil and stuff like that. "Make me something to eat." Now, she's honest with him. And she says to him, "Sir, we have very little. As a matter of fact, all that I have is a handful of flour and a little oil. And after me and my son eat it, we're going to die. That's it. There's no Social Security. You know, there's no, income from the government at that time. You don't have any money. You die." And he says to her, "Do not worry." Now, he's speaking to her as a prophet. The prophet is not a person who foretells the future. A prophet is a person who speaks God's word to a particular situation. And so he says to her, "Trust me, it's not going to happen." And so what does the woman do? She has a choice of what is worthwhile. Does she use the oil and the flour to feed her son and herself the last meal? Or does she listen to this man who claims to be speaking for God? Now, you may call her naive and whatever, you know, that's another issue. But somehow her inner self said, "Trust this guy that he is speaking for God." And she does it. Notice what she did. She put the worth of the prophet higher than the worth of her own life. And she gave the prophet the oil. Of course, the ending is that God honors that by not allowing the oil or the flour to run out. But what was the basic act? It was an act of worship. It was an act of saying, "I choose," and this is the operative word, "I choose." The human being is the only animal that gets to choose what is worthwhile. It's the only animal. You choose. And this woman said, "No, I will choose not this guy, but what I believe is the command of God. He is first." Move over to the gospel, and you have the widow. And Jesus looks at her. And notice, he doesn't say, they're stealing from her. Jesus doesn't focus, and neither does the Old Testament, on how much she's giving. She is giving, in that painting, you can see the two coins, which in the ancient world were really pretty much like a few cents. And what Jesus is saying, when she had to choose what was worthwhile, in her mind, she gave to God what was first. As a matter of fact, I would actually say that she overgave. She overgave. But what Jesus is recognizing is not the amount. It's the act of saying, "God is so important to me that I will give him my all." That is what Jesus compliments. That is what. Now, let's bring that down to the here and now. I always tell people, I ultimately, I don't care what any of you give. In the 18 years that I have been here, I never, ever look at what you contribute. I don't know what any of you contribute. You need to know that, because I think there's a few people who are a little confused. There are some people who actually think that the bishop sends us money to operate the church. Folks, it goes the other way. Okay? The bishop doesn't send us money. The bishop bills us for running the church. Now, where do we get the money? Now, and the money is for what? And the money is for what? Let me put it this way. I have to give Father Scott the credit. Last year, I heard him say this, and it stuck in my mind because I consider myself far smarter than Father Scott. We tease each other. But I couldn't figure out why I didn't think of this before. He said, if you ever go to any church that doesn't ask you for money, it's a church that's doing absolutely nothing. It's a church that's doing absolutely nothing. And I thought, my God, that's right. And it's so simple. Because what we're doing here, and we hopefully any church worth its salt is doing, is we're obeying Jesus. We're coming together to make sure that the things that are, wait for it, worthwhile, are the things that we support and the things that we try to do for each other. Think it through in the society we live in. Especially, you see our parish here. You see that we pay special attention to kids, and not only to little kids. We pay a lot of attention to preteens and to teens and to young adults. And through our ACTS ministry and classes, we have more adult education here than you should know what to do with. And why do we do that? Because this is the only place you can come. This is the only place you can come that the message is the message of light and truth. Look, folks, I've said this before. I love being an American. I love it. I'm originally from Cuba, but I love being an American. But I love the idea of America sometimes a lot more than something of what we are becoming. I think if you look at the polls, most Americans today, and this is nothing about Obama or Clinton or any of the Republicans, but I think our culture and our government is something else. But our culture is going in the wrong direction. We're going in the wrong direction. And what I see is that our community is where we come together to say, no, we live by different values. Our worth-ship is different orders than the culture out there. We want to encourage each other so that what we find worthwhile copies what Jesus finds worthwhile. And that's what we do together. It's not just about coming to Mass and, you know, having good music, which we do in all the Masses. But it's all about making sure that what is worthwhile remains in the correct order, and we are in this together, and we participate. And participate means take part. And so we all give to make sure that we continue. You know, and our budget is open to you, anyone who wants to see it. We don't spend money stupidly or foolishly. We spend our money to make sure that we establish an environment that is gentle, an environment that is life-giving to our people. We do that. And you and I are doing it together. So whatever you give, and I don't know how much any of you gives, the only thing I'm asking you to do is to make sure that it's given in worship. If you're going to give $1, please don't let it be the last one. Don't let it be the superfluous from excess. Oh, whatever's left over. Can you imagine the insult that is to God? This is what I'm going to give, but I'm putting you at the very end of the line when it comes to what I give. That's the exact opposite of what this is all about. So it's not a matter of counting how much you give, how much out. This is the way I'm going to treat you, how much you give. No. It's a matter of making sure that not only with your money, but with your time and with your energy, that your life is ordered in a worshipful manner according to Jesus. That's what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. Okay? Remember what a disciple is? A student. And if you're a student, what's the course? The course is how to be human. How to have your worship levels in the correct order. So, let me end here, which I'm sure many of you are going, wonderful Father, but shut your mouth. But this weekend, Father Scott and I and Father Morfin, we all agreed that we would speak about it. And it happened to be that this reading was really the reading of the day. We didn't change the readings or anything. But it's a reminder that it's all about reordering our priorities and making sure that we establish a community where people can hear the gospel. And where the forces that make us who we are not the forces out there, commercial forces, forces that have absolutely their worship, the worship of secular society is totally screwed up. And you know it, and I know it. And if we don't do anything, our kids and each other, we're going to accept those values. And we can't. We can't. And so, in your pews, this is not going to happen today, but in your pews, you're going to see your commitments for the next year. There's a mistake on it, by the way. It says, what am I going to do for the rest of 2015? It's actually 2015 and 2016. And we're not taking that today. But I want you to think about it. Because we live, and we live together here, work together from that. And the last thing I'll say, just make sure that whatever you choose, that you honor God. That you're saying, okay, God, this is what I choose to give. And by the way, what we always say is, if you use 10%, give 5% of whatever you choose, choose another charity. Choose something that you want to support. Like, for me, in the way I give, I really like supporting wounded warriors. So I give half of my tithe to wounded warriors. But you can pick any charity you want, right? And then the other half to your church. And why? Because this is where we live. This is where the rubber meets the road for us. Okay? So, you'll hear just a little bit more about this next week, and then in a couple of weeks we're going to have the offering Sunday in which just make your commitment to it. But remember, this is all about worship.